take you out of this place. Someone you could lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful.
Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show on Monday, the 4th of November, 2019. This is show number 77. Hope you're well. Hope you had a great weekend. And we have a great show ahead of you this morning. Today, we are going to be talking about seasonal affected disorder, or SAD as it's commonly known. We're going to talk about how it develops, some of the symptoms, and how people that struggle with the disorder can help themselves. We'll also be talking about vitamin A towards the end of the show. And in the middle, we have a guest interview of today. Today we have Fran Harding. Good morning, Fran.
Good morning.
It's great to have you on the show.
Really pleased to be here.
And Fran is from Equilibrium Health. And today we are going to be talking about kinesiology. So I'm looking forward to that. So a quick disclaimer before we kick the show off. The purpose of the Health Matters Radio Show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters that we cover, and to help educate and inform you in ways that you could improve your own health. But this is on the understanding that I am not engaged in providing medical advice, and the content of the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your health, or you require medical or other expert assistance, then please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 first, or speaking with your local pharmacist. All content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience, and often my opinion. And as such, I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. So, seasonal affected disorder, SAD. The reason I'm bringing this subject up is we are coming into that time of year when seasonal affected disorder is becoming more common. What people don't realise is actually it isn't unique to the winter seasons. Actually, people can get seasonal affected disorder at different times of the year. But I'm mentioning it now because seasonal affected disorder in the winter is the most common. And seasonal affected disorder is actually a type of depression. So it falls under the mental health umbrella, or poor mental health umbrella. So it's a type of depression that comes and goes according to the season. And people with SAD, and we will call it SAD from now on because seasonal affected disorder is too much of a mouthful. People with SAD will have these symptoms of depression or equally mania at roughly the same time every year. But like I said, in the kind of the autumn, the winter periods, it becomes a lot more common. And people that struggle with SAD during the autumn and winter periods will find that when spring and summer comes, it disappears. Now, people with poor mental health might find that their symptoms change at different times of year anyway. For example, people with bipolar will find that they're more likely to experience mania in spring and summer, and then depression in autumn and winter. And it's quite common to be affected by these changing seasons. Whether you struggle with SAD or not, actually, the changing seasons can affect us all. So it can affect our mood, it can affect our energy levels, particularly when it gets colder or indeed when it gets warmer. And this can also manifest itself in changes to our sleeping patterns and our eating patterns. So this can affect anyone. But if these feelings start to interfere with your day-to-day life, it could be a sign that you have seasonal affected disorder, a form of depression. And if they keep coming back at the same time of year, then that is a common trait of SAD, or as it's known, or also a seasonal depression. At that time, you might want to consult your doctor if you haven't done already, because they might be able to help you. And we'll come on to techniques and ways that people can find relief in a moment. So when we're looking at symptoms of SAD, normally they start out quite mild, but they get worse as the season progresses. And also when that season changes, so when we go from autumn into winter, it gets worse. And then when we go from winter into spring and summer, then people will often become completely well again. Now, some of the symptoms of SAD in the winter time include things like lack of energy, sleeping problems. So they might find that they're sleeping more or less than they are the normal, or they might have more difficulty waking up, or indeed difficulty in falling asleep or staying asleep. They might find it hard to concentrate, might find themselves just tired all the time. And also they might find themselves more prone to physical health problems. So things like colds, infections, or other illnesses. They might find that they gain weight over the winter period. And this can be because of a change in appetite. So they might find themselves feeling more hungry or wanting more snacks, and particularly high sugar, high carbohydrate snacks. They might lose interest in normal activities. Their sex drive might start to decline. And when it gets more serious, they might find themselves with suicidal feelings. Now, it's not really understood why SAD develops, but many experts think that it's because of a change in the body's circadian rhythm. So our body clock changes at certain times of the year. And it's kind of thought that this happens in winter because there's less daylight. And as a result of that, there's less of the hormones melatonin and serotonin. And one is the feel-good hormone and one is the sleep hormone. And it can affect the hormonal balance of sleep and mood, which can lead on to seasonal affective disorder. So what do you do if you think you've got SAD? Well, like I said, it's quite common for people to feel a little bit flat, a little bit lethargic in winter because of the change in temperature, the change in climate, the change in the amount of daylight hours that we have, and obviously more darkness, particularly in the mornings and in the early evenings. But if these symptoms don't go away and it starts to affect your everyday life, then it might be time to have a chat with your doctor. Now, SAD can be quite difficult to diagnose, and it might be a case that you have to be monitored over a number of years before SAD is actually made as a diagnosis. Because if it's the first time you've been there, the doctor might think, well, it's just a passing thing, and maybe, you know, it will go. Equally, if you've had it for a few years, then it could be it could lead the doctor down the path to make a diagnosis of seasonal affective disorder. And when it comes to treatment, there are a number of different therapies that can work for seasonal affective disorder. One is called bright light therapy, or phototherapy as it's commonly known. And this is where you are exposed to bright light coming from a special light box for 30 minutes a day. Other treatments can include medicine, counselling, cognitive behavioural therapy, psychodynamic psychotherapy, and also, interestingly, when we talk to Fran in a moment, we are going to have a chat about kinesiology. So that will be an interesting thing to discuss in relation to not just seasonal affective disorder, but also other conditions within the mental health and depression spectrum. Now, lots of people have heard of SAD. And also depression as depression in general. It doesn't mean that they actually understand what it's like if they haven't felt it before. And they might not understand how it affects you as an individual if you are struggling with the condition. A bit like depression, it doesn't mean that you're just a little bit sad or you just feel a little bit down. And people around you need to be sympathetic and empathetic to how you feel. And the worst thing to do with anyone that's struggling with mental health conditions and problems is to tell them to snap out of it or to not take them seriously. Seasonal affective disorder is a recognised condition, as is depression. And the people around you, if you are one of the ones that do struggle with the condition, people around you need to be empathetic and supportive of you. And for you to understand that it is a real condition, it can be frustrating, it can be upsetting if people around you don't understand how you feel, but But it's also important to understand that you're not alone, and for you to talk to people who do understand the condition. And, you know, many of you will know that I'm a Samaritan volunteer. And actually, you could reach out to organisations like the Samaritans, or indeed organisations like Mind, just to have someone to talk to who may understand how you're feeling. But there are ways that you can help yourself. Now, these aren't cure-alls, but there's some things here. If you do struggle with SAD, there's some simple things that you can do that might not cure you, but might help with your symptoms. So these are things like getting as much natural daylight as possible. If you're working, even a brief lunchtime walk can be beneficial. So get some exposure to natural sunlight. If you are working, or if when you're at home, try to make your work and home environment as light and airy as possible. And indeed, if you can, sit near a window so you have that exposure to natural daylight. And it doesn't have to be blue sky daylight, just normal daylight, even on a cloudy day, can actually help. Take plenty of exercise, particularly outdoors and particularly in daylight. It's great to go down the gym, but you're stuck in the gym. So it's better to go down the gym than not doing exercise at all. But get out, even if it's a brief, a brisk walk or some jogging or whatever it might be, out in the outdoors and in daylight. Obviously, eating a healthy, balanced diet, staying away from processed carbohydrates, making sure you're getting lots of natural foods, vegetables, good quality meat, fish, if you eat meat and fish, and a good balance of fruits as well can help. And if possible, try to avoid stressful situations, because that can make the condition worse. And yet there are ways and methods to help you to manage stress as well. And as I mentioned, talk to your friends and family. Don't suffer alone. Help them to try to understand how you feel, and help them to understand how your mood changes during the winter. And then they too can potentially give you the support that you need to get you through this difficult time. So there you go. Seasonal affective disorder. It affects more people than we would like to think, actually. And I think the key is if you are struggling with it, is to be very open with people around you, because it will affect your mood. It will affect your behaviour. And if they understand what you're going through, then they can support you through the winter period. So after the break, we are going to go on to our guest interview of the morning with Fran. But to take us there, we have a great song by Take That.
It's not already broken.
were spoken, all of the lines that got away. Didn't we take the time to say them all?
You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva, on Monday, the 4th of November, 2019. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. So go to Twitter and you can follow my show page. On Facebook, if you search the Health Matters Radio Show, you'll be able to like the show's Facebook page and obviously be kept up to date with regular news about the show. And you'll be able to listen again to this show and all previous 76 shows on the media page of my website. My website is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And equally, you can listen again to the show on iTunes. Just go to the podcast page on iTunes, type in the Health Matters Radio Show, and you can subscribe to the show's podcast. So we've mentioned seasonal affective disorder and we've mentioned depression as well. And that ties in quite nicely with our guest interview of the morning. Now, today we have Fran Harding, and Fran is from Equilibrium Health. And Fran is a reflexologist and a kinesiologist as well. So I'm fascinated to find out more about what Fran does and how her services can help us and help you. So it's great to have you on the show this morning, Fran.
Glad to be here.
And I'm really interested in finding out more about what you do and how you got into doing what you do. So perhaps you'd like to start at the beginning. So before we talk about what you're doing now, perhaps give us some background as to how it developed and how you got into doing reflexology and kinesiology.
Okay, well, I come from a banking background originally, but my last role as a financial advisor, doing a full-time job, part-time hours, in a competitive environment, whilst bringing up two young children, had me burnt out by the time I reached my late 30s. And prior to this, I'd only ever sought medical help through my GP. But conventional medicine couldn't help me, as I had developed chronic fatigue and I felt totally exhausted, with every part of my body aching after only the smallest of exertion. And the only advice my doctor could give me was rest. So a chance taster treatment with a reflexologist at a local Pamper event, however, was a total epiphany, leaving me feeling completely normal for a few days. And this led to further treatments where this relief grew and grew and eventually guided me to training and then practicing reflexology for the last 17 years.
So that's really interesting because for people that listen to the show on a regular basis, the common theme of people that come on the show as guests is they've been through an experience. They don't just get into doing what they're doing because they think, oh, I'll try this, that or the other. Normally, they've had a personal experience, normally health-related, and it's helped those individuals onto a path to help other people who are also going through the same thing. So you can see how your journey developed. And how long did you suffer with chronic fatigue from?
Well, the chronic fatigue probably in its acute stage was about 18 months, but I found the reflexology within about 3 months of falling victim to this illness. Mm-hmm. And I just got stronger and stronger, and it was like a light at the end of the tunnel for me. And I knew that I wouldn't be able to go back to the life that I had before. So I decided that this was the route for me, as you say, to help others who were experiencing the same sort of issues that I was.
And it's interesting with chronic fatigue, because it's been around for a long time, probably the best part of, I would say, over 30 years. But it's only in recent times, relatively recent times, that it's actually been recognised and acknowledged. I think back in the day it used to be called yuppie flu, and, you know, there were lots of derogatory comments made about people that suffered with chronic fatigue, you know, about being lazy and all that. But it's actually now recognised as a, you know, it is a recognised illness. But it's interesting that even though it's a recognised illness, the only advice doctors give is rest. I would say probably in more extreme conditions, you might be put on antidepressants. There's a thing called the Alexander technique, which I know some people use. But when you're faced with a real illness and all the doctors say is just rest, you, a bit like yourself, you kind of think there must be something else.
Absolutely. And I had never had cause to think of anybody else other than the GP. And it was only when I experienced the treatment of reflexology, my eyes opened to the world of complementary health.
Yeah, yeah. So you spent 17 years practicing reflexology.
Absolutely.
So where did that transition or the additional service of kinesiology come in?
Well, I had I have a fellow reflexologist who I regularly swap treatments with, and she's always fascinated me as her first port of call for any health issue that reflexology couldn't resolve was to visit her kinesiologist. Then one day, whilst we were at a complementary health trade fair together, we came across a large stall promoting kinesiology taster days to find out if you wanted to train. Our conversation with the kinesiologist at this event encouraged us to sign up for a foundation course in our local area. And I have never looked back. My ongoing training has been the most transformational journey that I have ever taken.
Wow, powerful, powerful. Very. So when it comes to that training, how has that impacted you on a personal level?
Very profoundly. I've always felt that I was strong in mind, but weak in body. I never really analysed this, but just accepted that my muscles did not always support me physically. I became much more aware of my limitations, however, when I took up yoga after my illness in my 30s. But after much practice, some of the most simple postures defeated me, yet I could master harder ones with ease. It was only as a result of the kinesiology training that I learned how major structural muscles can switch off as a result of trauma, deficiency of nutrition, blockages of energy, impeding lymph flow, trapped energy, or emotions. I then learned how to reactivate these muscles, and suddenly I found that postures that had defeated me before were effortless, and this carried over to my everyday life and changed my physicality totally. I now feel very much more structurally supported.
Very interested in this sort of transformation that it's had on you personally. So when it comes to, I think reflexology is probably better known, in my personal opinion, than kinesiology is. So people will probably understand what reflexology is, but I think kinesiology is a bit less well known. So perhaps you could explain where kinesiology come from and what it does for people.
Okay, well, it originated from a chiropractor called George Goodhart in the 1960s, from his initial correlation that by using manual muscle testing, which had been developed in the 1940s, a weak muscle could be made stronger by applying chiropractic techniques. He then expanded this technique to incorporate many other therapies, using the body itself as a diagnostic tool through the muscle test.
Okay, so what's the muscle test?
Okay. Well, if you think of all the health issues that we have to deal with in the modern world,
mm-hmm.
digestive disorders, hormonal imbalances, joint and muscle pain, stress, anxiety or depression, allergic reactions such as eczema or asthma, fears or phobias, all of these are imbalances of the body. And kinesiology can help restore equilibrium, balance in the body and achieve optimum health. It is a dynamic, profound tool to enable that equilibrium. A muscle test can establish whereabouts the body's imbalance lie, in what order they need to be corrected, and what therapies are needed to correct these imbalances. Kinesiology then has a whole toolbox of therapies, from structural techniques, nutrition, energy, and emotional work to utilise, which the muscle test will validify and will also confirm efficacy once sufficient work has been done. Improvements can generally be felt after just one treatment, and results after about three.
Sounds very powerful. So, obviously, without mentioning people by name, mm-hmm. for confidentiality reasons, what kind of successes have you had with people that you've worked with?
Okay, well, every single treatment is unique to each individual, even if they present with common symptoms, as we are all unique human beings. But my observation is that the more complex the symptoms are, the greater the profound dynamic effect of kinesiology is felt. So I recently treated a young mum who was feeling really run down and who had not returned to her normal self emotionally since the birth of her child 2 years previously, who felt brain foggy and had digestive issues. Halfway through the treatment, I checked how she was feeling. Her response was, "It stopped. The noise." So I clarified whether she was referring to an ear issue, and she just said, "No, the chatter in my head. I feel so calm." Another lady commented to me after a hormone imbalance to help with her very debilitating menopausal issues that she would have paid me double for the feeling she left the clinic with. My beautician, who had had to wear gloves whilst treating clients for about the last 3 years due to a wart on her finger, who had literally spent thousands on laser and other treatments, was amazed when it disappeared after just one treatment. The luster and thickness of another postmenopausal client's hair returned, and in the last year, she's taken no hay fever medication for an allergy she had suffered with for over 50 years. These are just a few of the many transformations that my clients have experienced through kinesiology balancing.
Wow. So what's the common theme? So people have struggled with these conditions, and maybe they've done what perhaps you did when you suffered with chronic fatigue. You've gone down the traditional medicine route. They've not found any cures as such, perhaps medication to mask the symptoms, but no actual long-term solutions. And they've been looking out for alternative therapies. And then obviously they've maybe done their research or maybe just spoken to you and gone down that route for you to help them.
Yes. Kinesiology is essentially getting to the root of the issue,
as opposed to masking the symptoms.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Sounds powerful. So who would be your ideal client? Because obviously from what you said there, there's a range of different conditions that you've helped people with, but what's the common theme and who are you looking for to approach you just for a chat to see if you can help them?
Okay, well, I think your listeners have probably got the gist that I can help anyone with any health imbalance, but I am particularly interested in those who, like myself, had unexplained symptoms, or those that haven't had satisfactory results from conventional routes, or who've just been told that they'll have to put up with it or live with it.
Hmm. Well, a bit like you. You go to your doctors with chronic fatigue symptoms and they say, well, just get some rest.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know, modern medicine is amazing and in some cases can be life-saving. But in my opinion, often masked the symptoms and, like you say, don't deal with the root cause. As you know, I specialise in type 2 diabetes and the medication for type 2 diabetes just deals with the symptoms. It doesn't actually take away the root cause. And all the time that you don't take away the root cause, you don't deal with the problem.
No.
And equally, if you don't deal with the root cause, it can always come back worse and more aggressive. So I am absolutely a fan of what you do. I think if you deal with the root cause, it's a much more sustainable long-term solution. So what are your plans? Obviously, we're coming towards the end now of 2019, going into 2020. But what are your plans for the rest of this year and going into the new year?
Okay, well, my ongoing plan is to always raise the profile and understanding of this amazing treatment. But on a more practical level, I've recently opened up another venue where I can practice. So clients now have the option to see me in either Mepham or Gravesend in Kent. And I just want to spread awareness of this.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. I think awareness of kinesiology definitely needs to be improved. And I think this is a good step towards it. So in your opinion, why do you think people should come and have a chat with you?
Okay, well, I'm very passionate about kinesiology and dedicated to being the best kinesiologist I can possibly be. I'm continually honing my skills through additional training and I'll give it 100% in every single treatment.
Excellent. And if people want to get hold of you, how do you operate?
Okay, well, I have a website, www.equilibriumhealthkent.co.uk, and a Facebook page, Equilibrium Health Kent, either of which quotes my contact number. And I'd be happy to provide a 10-minute telephone consultation to anyone who wants to discuss how my kinesiology treatment could help them personally.
Sounds good. And as I understand it, you want to do a quick demonstration about how it might help people?
What I'd like to do before I leave is I'd like to offer your listeners who may be feeling stressed, anxious, tense, or maybe suffering with SAD disorder, a technique to overcome these feelings.
Okay.
So
I'll leave it over. You have the floor. I will mute my mic and I will give you the next 5 minutes or so to do your thing.
Thank you, Neil. So listeners, if you are sitting comfortably, take your middle finger of your right hand and place it on top of the index finger on the same hand, and place these joined fingers above the left eye, halfway in between the hairline and the eyebrow, where the eyebrow peaks, directly in line with the pupil. Now place the thumb of your right hand on the same place on the right side of your forehead. Now if you are able, cup the top of your neck just beneath the skull with your other hand, but only if it feels comfortable to do so. Close your eyes, and I'd like you now to just breathe. Expand your lungs from the bottom of your stomach up through your ribs as high as you can to your shoulders. Slowly and deeply breathe. Remember a place where you were happy, where you felt safe, secure and comforted. Use all your senses to envisage this place. What can you see? Make it larger, more colourful, and brighter. What can you hear? Make it clearer, sharper, and maybe louder. What can you feel? The sun on your face, the wind in your hair, the sand running through your fingers, the spray of water. Remember deeply. Is there a smell that you associate with this memory? Breathe it in. Is there a taste that you recall? Lick your lips and remember and breathe. Just breathe deeply and slowly. Allow this image to start to fade, the vision to recede, the sound to mute, the feelings to disperse, the taste and smell to evaporate. Take one last deep breath. Bring your breath back to a normal pattern. Release your hands into your lap and slowly open your eyes and smile with the knowledge that you can use this technique whenever you need it.
That was great. And so relaxing as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Fran. Would you like to just give us a quick reminder of your website address?
Yes, it is www.equilibriumhealthkent.co.uk.
And you offer a 10-minute discovery session, and also people can find you on Facebook as well and make contact with you there.
Yes, I have page Equilibrium Health Kent on Facebook.
Super. It's been really good to have you on the show. Thank you very much. And thank you for that demonstration. It was... yeah, very relaxing, very calming. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And what I'll do is, when I do the show's post-promotion, I'll pop your contact details onto social media as well for you.
Thank you.
After the break, we are going to have a chat about vitamin A.
Just go ahead now. Right now, diamonds in his pockets.
Was Two Princes by the Spin Doctors. You're listening to the Health Matters radio show with me, Neil De Silva, on Monday, the 4th of November, 2019. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, search the Health Matters radio show and you can follow the show's Facebook page. You can listen again to this show on the media page of my website or on iTunes. Go to iTunes, go to podcasts, type in the Health Matters radio show and you can listen to all previous shows there as well. And as always, if you'd like to contact me directly away from social media, please do so through my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And if you'd like to come on the show as a guest, as Fran has done today, and talk about what you do and how you got into doing what you do and how you can help people, then please drop me a line via my website and we'll see about getting you on the show in one of the future shows over perhaps November, December or into January. So vitamin A, over the next few weeks, I'm going to cover the major vitamin groups because I would say pretty much almost everyone has heard about vitamin A, vitamin B, vitamin C, D, E and K. But a lot of people don't know what these vitamins do, what they can do for you and what happens if you are deficient. So today we are going to talk about, for the next 10 minutes or so, vitamin A. So why is vitamin A so important? Now, vitamin A is important for good vision, for healthy skin, and also it's a great supporter of our immune system. Now, normally, if we have a varied, healthy diet, so lots of fruit, lots of vegetables, vitamin A deficiency is quite rare. But if you are suffering with vitamin A deficiency, it can quite easily be treated. Now, vitamin A is commonly known as retinol, and it has several important functions. So there are two types of vitamin A. The first type is called fully formed, and the second type is known as a precursor or provitamin A. So when we talk about fully formed vitamin A, this is vitamin A that's found in meat, in poultry, in fish and dairy products. And the second type, the precursor, is found in fruits, vegetables and other plant-based products. So vitamin A is retinol and the precursor to vitamin A is called beta-carotene. I'm sure many of you have heard of beta-carotene. And you can only get vitamin A from food and from drink. And like I say, most people who have a reasonably balanced diet and they're eating lots of natural foods will generally get all the vitamins they need, including the other vitamin groups, from the food that they're eating. So a healthy diet is really important. And some good sources of fully formed and precursor vitamin A include things like lean meats, liver pate, poultry, oily fish, egg yolks, leafy green vegetables, and also orange, yellow, and other coloured vegetables as well. Legumes and beans, fruit and tomatoes, whole grain or high fibre foods, so whole grain bread as an example, and not just brown bread or white bread. Couscous is also quite good. Oats and barley are good as well. Nuts and seeds, butter, yogurt, cheese, but obviously be careful with the fats in dairy products. And as I mentioned, liver is a particularly good source of vitamin A, although if you eat too much liver, you are at risk of a vitamin A overdose. Okay, so if you eat liver more than once a week, you might be at risk of consuming too much vitamin A. And as a fat-soluble vitamin, it's a vitamin that we store. So when we talk about fat-soluble and water-soluble, the B-vits and the C-vits are water-soluble, which means if you consume too much, you will just pass them out through your urine. If you consume fat-soluble vitamins, so A, D, E, and K, then your body stores what it doesn't need, which means if you have too much of it, it can be a problem. If you can't get vitamin A from dairy-based sources or meat-based sources, perhaps you're a vegetarian, then you can boost your vitamin A intake by including good sources of the precursor, so beta-carotene, because beta-carotene can be converted into vitamin A by your body. And as I mentioned, good sources of beta-carotene are things like yellow, red and green vegetables, so spinach, carrots, for example, sweet potatoes, red peppers, and also yellow fruit like mangoes, papayas and apricots. And the recommended daily intake of vitamin A is actually quite small. It's only 0.7 milligrams for a man and 0.6 milligrams for a woman. If you take too much vitamin A, so if you start going high with vitamin A, perhaps you're supplementing or you're eating lots of liver, then over many years it can affect your bones and it can lead to osteoporosis, particularly for older people, and obviously particularly postmenopausal women are at higher risk of osteoporosis as well. And this is where your bone density reduces and you have a higher risk of fractures. So if you eat liver or liver pate more than once a week, you might be getting too much vitamin A. And interestingly, if you don't get enough vitamin D, you could be at risk of the more harmful effects of too much vitamin A. And people that who might be at risk of not having enough vitamin D include people like pregnant and breastfeeding women, people that are aged over 65, and also people that are not exposed to much daylight. So, for example, people who cover up their skin for cultural reasons, or those that are housebound or confined indoors for long periods, or indeed at this time of year, people that go to work in the dark and come home in the dark and spend the rest of the time stuck in an office. That can be a problem as well. And also people with darker skin, so people of Afro-Caribbean or South Asian origin, can be at risk of vitamin D deficiency. Many vitamins contain vitamin A. And other supplements like fish liver oil also are quite high in vitamin A. So if you're taking supplements that contain vitamin A, make sure that your daily intake of vitamin A from food does not exceed 1.5 milligrams, which is the top end of the safe level. And if you eat liver every week, you shouldn't really supplement with vitamin A at all. In terms of vitamin A supplementation, as I mentioned, if you've got a varied and balanced diet, you probably don't need to supplement specifically with vitamin A, because there's actually no good evidence that they can help unless you have a deficiency. And if you are going to take vitamin A supplements, you should only do so on doctor's advice. So could you be at risk of vitamin A deficiency? Well, it's one of those deficiencies that has a couple of symptoms. One of them is a difficulty in being able to see properly, particularly at night. It can also be manifest in perhaps getting more infections on a regular basis. And if you can associate with some of those symptoms, then maybe it's time to have a chat with your doctor and they may do the appropriate testing. If you're deficient in vitamin A, it might be that your body can't absorb it properly from your food. And that can come about because maybe you drink a lot of alcohol, maybe you have a medical condition, so anorexia nervosa, liver disease, cystic fibrosis or celiac disease can make the absorption of vitamin A more difficult. Or if you've had recent gastrointestinal surgery, that can be a problem as well. And yes, as I mentioned, you can overdose, you can take too much vitamin A, which is why if you're going to supplement specifically with vitamin A, you need to talk to your doctor first. And actually having too much vitamin A can cause serious health problems long term, as I mentioned, long term issues with your bones, but it can also cause things like nausea, hair loss, blurred eyesight. It can make your skin go orange in more serious cases and also give you an inability to control your body movement. And when we come on to pregnant women, we mentioned pregnant women earlier, but too much vitamin A can cause some serious birth defects. So if you are pregnant, Having large amounts of vitamin A can harm your unborn baby. So if you are pregnant or thinking about having a baby, then don't eat liver or liver-based products, including pate, because these are high in vitamin A, and don't take supplements that contain vitamin A unless you've spoken to your doctor, and do it only on their advice and their recommendations. So general advice is, you know, you can get all the vitamin A you need by eating a varied and balanced diet. If you take a supplement that contains vitamin A, don't take too much because it can be harmful, and only do it on a doctor's recommendation. And liver is a really good source of vitamin A, but try and avoid eating liver or liver-based products, including pate, more than once a week. And if you are taking any supplements, be aware of the level of vitamin A that's in them. And women who have been through the menopause, as I mentioned, and also older men are more at risk of things like osteoporosis. So they too should avoid eating liver or liver products more than once a week, or have smaller portions. Try and avoid supplementing with vitamin A specifically unless it's on the doctor's advice. And be careful with other supplements that also include vitamin A, like fish liver oil, because obviously you're going to get vitamin A from that, and that could lead to consuming too much vitamin A. So hopefully you found that interesting. It's a brief overview of what vitamin A is, what it does, and also some of the symptoms of vitamin A deficiency. So we are at the end of the show now. I'd like to thank you for listening. I'd like to thank Fran for coming on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
It's been great to have you on the show this morning, Fran. After the last song, we have the Channel Radio News and Weather. If you'd like to come on the show, as Fran has done today, then please drop me a line through my website, www.i-nutrition.co.uk, and we'll see about getting you on a future show. If you'd like to contact me generally for any of the services that I offer, then please do so through my website. And please do follow the show's Facebook page, The Health Matters Radio Show, or on Twitter, follow the Twitter feed at Health Radio Show to be kept up to date with all regular news. So all that leaves me to do is to bid you a happy and healthy week ahead, and I will catch you again next Monday.
The heart is a blue, shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. Traffic is stuck, and you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place. Someone you could lend a hand in return for grace. So beautiful.